Hi, my name is Mark. I'm the Prepper Guy, and this is a Prepper Guy podcast. In a world that's always changing and full of fear and confusion, and especially when it comes to prepping, I am a minimalist, and I like to be ready for anything that life may throw at us, whether it's bad, the end of the world, or just a flat tire on a deserted road.
Hump day! Yeah!
So the question seems to be coming up a lot regarding EMPs and how we would do as a nation or a people or a group of survivors if there was an EMP. Now, a lot of the videos and podcasts and articles that I have read all go into more of a detail on the effect of an EMP on our electrical grid and our lives as far as losing technology and being put back into the 1800s. The purpose of Will You Survive an EMP, the book by Mark Boyle, goes more into the human aspect of surviving an EMP, because the reality is, if there was an EMP right now, you wouldn't really feel it or see it or hear it, because they're done at such a high altitude to cause the actual pulse that's needed is usually 200 to 300 miles up into the atmosphere. And they use a high yield or high intensity EMP weapon that creates the most bang for the buck, let's say. So I look at being prepared and surviving things more in a negative way. It's like, yeah, I'm an optimist. And when I try to make decisions, I often think of the worst case scenario called Eaten by Wolves by Randy Pausch in one of his lectures. And he says the worst thing that would happen to him is if he was to be eaten alive by wolves. And that one thing makes it possible to be optimistic, because anything else is not that bad. So there are a lot of things that you don't need to worry about because you have a plan in place. So an EMP, how do you plan for that? Well, we really have a hard time planning for an EMP because it might not be an EMP. And based on a lot of the videos I've seen regarding EMPs, it's all over the map whether it would affect our cars or not affect our cars. How would it affect our utilities and our grid and emergency response, our food chain, first in, first out inventory? And it's really hard to actually quantify that and decide whether it would or it wouldn't have a certain level of effect on America or any nation for that matter. But we do know that during the original Gulf War, and I think it was Operation Desert Storm by George Bush Sr., we used tactical EMPs to take out their anti-aircraft and a lot of their ability to fight back in those first minutes or hours. So we can look at things like that and other tests that have been done, but it's really hard to just detonate an EMP device over America and then go, oh, look what happened. Because of that, we just don't know, and it leads to a lot of speculation. So an EMP may or may not destroy a country as far as the grid and the cars and all of that. But if it was in conjunction with a cyber attack that also hurt our infrastructure and our power grid, then the two of them might be just what the doctor ordered to bring us to our knees. So it's hard to actually say the effects of an EMP on our electrical grid and our lifestyle. But that's been talked about so much, going back to the EMP report that was released by a man in the Navy who'd studied nuclear bombs his whole life and explosions, did a report, the EMP report, and handed that over to Washington. And this is where most of the information comes from when we talk about EMPs right now. But that report came out on the same day the 9/11 report came out, and therefore it was overlooked because politicians, being as they are, would much rather attack Bush at that time and say that this had happened on his watch. And so the EMP report basically got no traction and was hardly looked at by most of Congress. So we are kind of in the dark on how this all works. The EMP Commission decided that the effects of a nuclear blast are not a new threat to our nation, but that the Soviet Union in the past, Russia basically, and other nations have the capability of detonating one of these devices over our country, and even North Korea, as of late, has that ability to really put a hurt on us as a country. So let's assume that the EMP actually did go off and did cause catastrophic events to our power grid, and also along with the cyber attack, where it could be a coronal mass ejection or a solar flare that caused this crippling effect to our country. And like I say, most of this is abstract and conjecture because, you know, would our water treatment facilities and food storage facilities and everything be knocked completely out of the loop? Well, we don't know. Would our financial records be wiped out and our investments gone? Would our medical records and prescriptions and all that are kept in the cloud be taken offline? Would supermarkets quit working? Would our telephones, our radios, and our TVs be dead? Would ATM machines be shut down and credit cards useless? How about our hospital operating rooms? We don't know. We can assume that if something hit us hard enough, even if it was a natural solar flare or a cyber attack, we could lose a lot of those facilities. Just like when the power grid went down in the East Coast and it affected quite a few states, it did affect those states. And all of those things did crash, the ATMs, everything like that. But it was kind of localized, even though it was quite a few states. And other people in the country still had communications. Texting was still working. A lot of the cell phones were still working in the cell towers because they're on battery backup. So it wasn't a complete 3 or 4 state blackout to where they had no information of what was going on. So it kind of helps keep that layer of civility in a country in check because those states aren't panicking because they still know that other states are fine and they're not in the dark as far as who did this, what's going on, we're all going to die, oh my God. But when something really affects our communications, then we would all be in the dark, not literally speaking, because EMP might take out the power grid. But the chaos kind of escalate because no one knows what's going on around the corner. You know, what's happening in that state? So if you don't have news and you don't have communications, then you really don't know what's going on. And that's when people will default back to their crazy state of mind, especially the Americans and other countries that have mental illness problems. You know, a big percentage of their population is on some form of medication to keep them in check and make them a functioning human in the society that they live in, whether it's antidepressants or any of those things, are highly controlled nowadays by medication to keep people doing okay. If you watch the show Homeland, Carrie, the star there, is bipolar. And when she doesn't have her medication, she really starts to lose it, I guess would be the way to put that. So this is what I feel would be the bigger threat, because America survived for hundreds of years without a power grid, without smartphones, without all of this technology. So the human existence will go on. We'll still wake up in the morning and be hungry. We'll still wake up and need a drink of water. We'll still have things to do that are required to keep us fed and a roof over our house. We might not be going to work because things have shut down, but we will still be alive. So the answer to the age-old question, would we survive an EMP? Well, an EMP is an electromagnetic pulse. We will survive that. We will survive the blast if it's done by a nuclear high-energy yielding bomb high in the atmosphere. Like I said, we wouldn't even feel it. Our skin wouldn't even tingle. We really wouldn't even notice it because it's gamma rays that is destroying all of our electronics. So yes, as far as being alive and not affected with radiation poisoning or being burnt or melted, yeah, we will survive it. We probably won't even notice if it was detonated, unless it was middle of the night and you happen to be looking up at that time and saw it. Odds are you wouldn't hear it. So rest assured, we will all survive an EMP and the effect from the Compton effect and the explosion. Where survival becomes a question after an EMP or an electromagnetic pulse, whether it's created by a rogue nation and a bomb or a massive solar flare or a cyber attack, the devastating part of it will not be from the explosion or the blast itself, but with what happens to us as a people. The government already knows that if there was an EMP, federal government's plan, as explained in the EMP Commission, is extensive and complex, to say the least. It involves a complicated working relationship with private business, government agencies, and we the people, and on paper, it works great. The biggest flaw in this plan is assuming that all things work together and without any hiccups. Well, most key players can't work together normally under normal circumstances. Our system has working parts, and if a fly gets in the ointment, there will be problems, such as police not showing up to work to keep the peace, so to speak, with criminals when they realize no one is going to be arresting them, or the worker bees see chaos in their neighborhood and won't go to work. Basically, the system will just stop working because everyone will hesitate, wondering what they can do. Everyone will stay home, from firefighters, police, power plant workers, stores, shop owners, our leaders, bankers. All the information will cease and a void will be filled with uncertainty. So I don't see their plan working as well as they hope it will work, because we saw that it didn't work after Katrina or in Sandy. And it's not to say that FEMA is stupid or inept. I just don't see that plans on paper ever work the way they thought, because of the cascading effect of people not going to work. So if it was a cyber attack and your job has no power, you're not going to go to work because there's no power to do your job. If you work in an industry that maybe handles just even food delivery for supermarkets, and you think, well, it'll be up and running tomorrow, then you might not show up until tomorrow. But you might not show up because all of a sudden chaos starts to ensue, just like with any powder keg type event, to where you might go, you know what, I'm going to stay home unless I get a call from my boss saying that everything's up and running, please come into work. So you stay home. You're one in 300 million worker bees in America, but let's say 10% of them do that. Then that's 300,000 people not showing up to work. So we don't know, once again, who will stay home and who will not. But if it affects, in a way, the police officers, their car don't run right, or their communications hub isn't working right, even though their car starts, maybe their radio is not working. Maybe their radio is working, but the 911 call center is down because of this power outage. If it was just in one area, it would be fine. We could almost use smoke signals to contact them. But when it happens across a nation, then there's a massive amount of uncertainty. For sure, first responders might look around at what's going on after day two and say, I'm not going into work. My family is here and they need me. And we really all do work every day for our family. So we put our lives in jeopardy with our job and everything because we want to provide for our family. Well, there's no reason to go to work if all of a sudden there's chaos in your neighborhood and those neighborhoods are affected nationwide. And now you don't really know how bad it is nationwide because maybe the cable network isn't working. Maybe your Cox Communication cable TV or Dish network is not working because of the power outage and the cyber attack, and the nature of it attacked a lot of the communications hubs like we did with Iraq in the first, you know, Desert Storm war. We shut down their communications, making it so ineffective for them to do their job that we were able to get in there and do our job. So once that happens and the cascading effect starts taking place, and factories shut down because they weren't kept running because of the power outage, and large production companies shut down, and if it's an EMP or a solar flare or some kind of something, I mean, even a cyber attack can blow up a lot of our transformers. And sure, we can get others and replace them, but you need trucks, you need people. Everyone has to go to work and work as a team with no communications and uncertainty of what's going on in their home, to where it slowly starts to break down. I'm not going to say it crashes and burns overnight, but I've always been fascinated with a runaway truck ramp. You've all seen them going down a very long grade on the highway, to where there's a sign that says up ahead there's a runaway truck ramp. And what happens is, when you have no brakes and you pull off onto this runaway truck ramp, it's just full of gravel. And it's, you know, small gravel, like pea gravel, and it's deep enough to where as your truck enters it, even if it's a big rig, the resistance, the friction, just the slowing effect of driving through sand in a riverbed, if you're not under a constant state of power, you're going to grind to a halt. And that's the whole purpose and thinking behind a runaway truck ramp. So it's a million little things that you have stopping you from moving forward. And that's what happens in a nation that is large enough to where when communications are down and we're not seeing what's going on the other side of the hill, in the other town, the other community, other than just from what neighbors are saying, then we're kind of in the dark. We've entered that runaway truck ramp. If people stop showing up for work, if 10% of the first responders don't come in, if 10% more people try to enter through our border causing a strain, then these things all start to slow down and grind to a halt our economy, our first responders, our electrical grid. Everything starts to cascade into a bad to worse scenario. And this is what I see as the bigger threat of an EMP, is this cascading effect that no one can predict. We don't know what'll happen, and the government, as usual, assumes that their plan on paper will work fine. But we have to default back to the knowledge that there's no conclusive test done that will really tell us what an EMP would do. So we have heard ad nauseum the effects of things that an EMP will bring upon our nation if one were to be detonated or there was a solar flare. But what I see lacking the most in this subject is the human effect. When you reach the end of what you should know, you will be at the beginning of what you should sense. So we have to kind of understand more of the human philosophy and the human side of not just an EMP, but any kind of problem that could collapse or crush any nation on such a scale. It doesn't have to be an EMP, but since we are talking about EMPs, let's go into what people themselves might do to cause the problem to even get worse. So talking about instinct, at least in this new world after an EMP, because it would be a new world, kind of like the old world, and we'd have to become like an animal in the wild. When you hear a sound or see something approaching, you should just leave or hide. Evaluate and determine if they are a threat from a distance. See, in this new reality, you would have to understand things on a different level, because people, by nature, are going to become more hostile. It's not because maybe the majority of them want to become hostile, but because the world will become hostile, just like in the animal kingdom. Every animal that walks out of its den every day is looking for food and trying to avoid becoming food. So like a wild deer doesn't really care if you're walking up to it to pet it and give it some fresh berries, or kill it and eat it. It will not let you get close enough to find out, and it does not care about your social graces or your intent. A mother bear protects her cubs. If you stumble onto her cubs' area where they're playing, she will attack you and maul you. She can't and won't look you over and see if you are a man or a woman, big or small, armed or not. She will defend her young. Birds will fly away from the nest to distract a predator from its young. And in a wolf pack, there is the older, and they work and they defend and hunt together. In the wolf pack, if someone or something moves into their area, then they will treat it as a threat or a resource that must be dealt with. We will have to become kind of no different than that. And it's not to say that we must become animals, but we must start trusting our instincts more as the human animal. Because when things collapse and there is no rule of law, then all there is your instinct. And whether someone is coming to bring you a drink of water during these last days, or coming to take your last drink of water, you really won't know by looking at them. And you might not have the time to go, hey, can I help you? There's a good expression in one of my favorite movies, The Postman with Kevin Costner. A lot of people didn't like that movie. I loved it. So he's heading back to, I guess, his camp after being gone for quite a while because he had to rescue some young lady, damsel in distress. And he sees someone approaching on another horse. And he said, this is the part I hate. Do I shoot them? Or do I talk to them? And really, it becomes that way. You have to evaluate on your feet really quickly, and you have to really make quick snap judgments about those that are coming within your area of operation, let's call it, because you won't have time to get to know them. Now, if your situational awareness is such that you're keeping an eye on your surroundings, let's say you have some higher ground and you're up on top of a hill or a mountain to where you can really observe people coming from maybe a day out, and you have the ability to maybe look through some binoculars and see their body language as they approach, watch how they're interacting with other people in their group. You can start to get a good read on whether they are friend or foe. Now, I would assume that anyone coming near me is going to be in the foe category until I learn exactly their intent. And you can get a lot of intent from people's body language. So if you see four or five or six young men, I will call them, coming toward your area of operation, and they're all high-fiving and throwing whiskey bottles and laughing and having a great time, what would that tell you about them? Well, in my opinion, the world has come to an end. Things are really bad. Normal people that were watching out for their family and working 6 days a week, 50 hours a week, would not be that happy because their world has collapsed. They're in fear for their children's lives and their existence, their food, their shelter, everything. And here's a group of young men, maybe even a couple women in the group, and they just seem to be having a great time. I would say that they are kind of up to no good. Doesn't mean I'm going to shoot them. It just means I'm going to avoid them. I'm not going to walk up to them and go, hey, can I have a hit of your whiskey bottle? Because they're not seeing the world as you are experiencing it at that moment. Everything's great for them. They look to be quite happy. Now, if you see a family approaching and you're really paying attention, and you see that the mother or father are really taking care of their children, whether they're younger or young adults, and they're kind of watching where they're going, and you see without hearing the way they respond to each other, and you can see that there's no disrespect. You see that when he talks to his spouse or she talks to him, that they're not cowering. You know, you look at a dog, you go to pet a dog, and if it ducks away, maybe that dog was abused. So if you see something that triggers a red flag in you, then you're definitely going to want to avoid those people. But if you see that they're normal people in this new world, and that it's just a family trying to survive and get out of the city, and they seem to be good people, there's no guarantees, but you can tell a lot by looking at people, then you might trust your instinct and go, I'm going to keep an eye on them a little bit more and watch them as they come into my area. And if it looks like once they get closer and you hear them and you hear their attitudes and the words they're saying, if it seems like there's somebody you can interact with, they actually stopped and ate food, so they're not going to be wanting to take yours because they are thought ahead. and they brought food and water. They're not just totally alone in the element, wondering what they're going to do next. Then you might want to approach them and go, hey, how you doing? Now, you're going to want to do it cautiously, but you might want to approach them. But if you hear or sense something that could be amiss, the children are saying they're hungry, and dad's like, don't worry, I'll get you something in a minute. You know, none of us have eaten in days. Then that moves the equation into a risk analysis. And you'd really want to really think about it, because you can't save everyone. And you might not have enough food to feed them and their whole family. And even if you have enough to maybe feed them for one meal, that is that many meals away from those you're watching out for. So instincts will become very, very important after an EMP attack. And that will be one of the main factors of whether you will survive the first year after an EMP. So we need to hone our ability and our instincts to look at people and make a decision whether you're going to talk to them or not. So let's talk about why it's important that we hone our skills on body language, reading people, understanding the words that they're saying, not so much the translation, but the intent, picking up on subtleties of like who laughs at whose joke, and who nods who. If you come into contact with people, you're really going to be one watching that. If you tell somebody, hey, we're really hungry, and they go, oh yeah, we'll feed you, as opposed to, oh, honey, go get him something to eat. It's a big difference there. And you need to learn this, because there's not going to be any legal boundaries after a collapse. There'll be no law enforcement to protect or determine those boundaries. So you're going to stumble into large groups of maybe alpha types, and they will just say whatever is here in their area of operation is theirs, and you must pay to enter or to cross or to move on. There'll be no safe passage, and most of the time there won't be any negotiations, and if there are any, it'll all be one-sided negotiations. So your instincts can protect you from walking into danger to where you might have to deal with an unruly group of people that do not have your best interest at heart. And to assume that they might care about your interest would be really a fool's errand, because it's different. There's no rule of law. There's no one there to say, hey, don't treat that person that way, because it's all gone. Those with the bigger guns and the most people to enforce their futile laws and rules will be those that make those rules. In a world without rule of law, it will be hard to determine what area belongs to what group. It is safe to assume that with certain types of people, wherever they are standing, they will consider it their territory. So your instincts can stop you or help you from stumbling into an area that maybe once was yours. You might have owned that whole 20 acres, but if they got there first and they have more guns, or there's more of them, or they have the mindset that it is now theirs, it really kind of is theirs. You won't be able to take them to court, and you won't be able to negotiate with them. They're not going to care about your deed or your property rights or any of that. So you don't want to stumble into these types of situations. And the best way to avoid that is to really have your head on a swivel. Now, that's a military kind of term, which means to just be aware of everything around you. Be listening. Be smelling. Be visual. Watch everything. Don't just go stumbling off through the forest going 2 more miles over this hill and that's where my log cabin is. Because someone might have got there first, or they might have been in that area before the EMP happened, and they've decided to just move in now because everything's different. So you're going to want to be listening. If you hear voices, voices travel a long way when it's dead silent outside. There's no airplanes flying over. There's no cars on the highway. There's no radio. Your phone's not ringing. Nothing's happening. Your daughter's not in the background clicking off a text. It's dead quiet. You will hear people's voices if you're paying attention. You might smell them smoking a cigarette or a campfire. You might even smell the smoke coming out of the chimney of your old log cabin that they just acquired. So pay attention. Smell. Watch. Listen. Now, I harp on this a lot when it comes to surviving any bad situation, but an EMP would take us to a different level of collapse. EMP would collapse our economy. It would collapse our healthcare. We might go into a pandemic situation because there's no doctors running around. There's no medications, no vaccinations. So they all are linked, and they all would bring about one or the other. And an EMP would bring them all down on us at one time. So within the first few days, weeks even, you really have to be paying attention. Now, people talk about groups and teams, and I'll just brush over that kind of lightly. Even if you're part of a big survival team, or you have your militia, or your group, or your bug out location, odds are an EMP would catch everyone off guard. Unless you were extremely lucky and everyone was at the group campsite during that very moment in time, you're probably going to be a lone wolf, because it's going to catch you maybe at work and you have to walk home. And then once you get home, you might have to walk to your retreat and join up with other team members. So for that week or two, you're going to be just as alone as all those people that do not have a team or a group or a bug out location. So you're going to need to make your way there. And during this process, you're going to want to definitely be paying attention. That way you will survive to get there. A lot of people think that it'll be like in all the books and the movies. You'll just happen to be a mile away from your retreat, and your doctor and your communications guy and all your equipment is there all on that very moment in time. But odds are that won't happen. So whether you're in a team or you're a lone wolf, sole survivor kind of person, you're going to be on your own for a while. And that mindset will keep you from getting into trouble. If you accept the fact that even though you don't want to be a lone wolf, there will be a period of time when you are alone. And the best way to survive that situation is not to go stumbling haphazardly into a bad situation. Now, bad situations can arrive really, really fast. If you camp for the night and you think you're away from everyone, you've gotten out of town, and you even did a cold camp where you didn't start a fire, you might get up in the morning and stumble right into somebody else that's wandering around. If it's your neighbor or your pastor or a teacher, you don't know them. You knew them, but you don't know them. So if they have a family and they haven't seen their children eating for 2 days while you've been, you know, they've been out wandering, what will their mindset be? It's hard to crawl inside of someone's head when their children haven't eaten. But think about your own children. What if your children hadn't eaten for 3 days? Odds would be that you haven't eaten for longer, because any parent is going to make sure their kids are fed, always giving the most of the water to the younger ones. So if a child is hungry, the parent is starving, if they're a good parent. So you, by not paying attention, you've now put you and yours into I'm not going to call it a bad situation, but a very unpredictable situation. How are you going to handle that? What are you going to do about that? You're a good person, I assume. Most people that are preppers and care, even non-preppers, are not at their core evil people, especially within the first week of a catastrophe like an EMP. So we're going to want to handle that situation in a way that fits who we are. But you still have an unknown variable of that person. Like I said, you knew him, but you don't know him or her. And to assume that just because they were a teacher or a pastor or your next-door neighbor does not mean that their intentions will be good, especially if there's hungry children around them. So how do you handle this? So in the next part of this, I want to talk about a little bit of psychology, pre-planning, pre-learning. Because trust me, if an EMP were to bring our nation down to a level of without rule of law and anarchy, your actions will be what determine your outcome. We can all sit there and go, well, I don't know. It depends on what the government does. I don't know. It depends on what that person does that I ran into. There's a great what-if card game that you read to other members of your home or group that might be playing this game, to where there's scenarios brought out and you have to tell the rest of the group how you would react. And then it forces you to think about it, and other people can then respond to your reactions. So it's kind of a what would you do type card game. And this is how I think people need to look at life, not just in their day-to-day life, but how they would react and act in a shit hit the fan, end of the world as we knew it type situation. So we're going to go into some pre-learning, because this is the most important part of your survival after an EMP. When I was a young man, seems like a million years ago, I learned a great lesson from a contractor friend of mine. Now, he was a very successful contractor, and we both attended the same church. And I had asked him, how do you avoid temptation? And the answer he gave me taught me something that transcended temptation. And I've used it most of my life to keep my head screwed on straight. He told me, he goes, I'm a successful guy. He goes, we're both young. We both make good money, and therefore we are apt to be tempted. He goes, it's very easy for you to be working on a job where a young woman might try to tempt you. And he goes, so that's not out of the ordinary. He goes, what I do is, he goes, I think about it. Because I actually think about it in such detail that I have a visceral reaction to that. So if you think about it, Mark, let's say a very pretty girl flirts with you and hits on you, and you give in to temptation. So he goes, you go back to her house or whatever, you do the deed, an hour later you're done and you go home. He goes, what will you lose when your spouse finds out? He goes, because most of the time they'll find out, or you will talk about it or give it up because you feel guilty. So you have children. In that divorce, you will probably lose your children. You're going to lose your home, and you're going to lose everything that you worked for. And when you really think about it, the reason you worked for all those things is so you would have a home and a family and a spouse. Because if you think about it deep enough and you really try to live it in some construct that you create in your mind, he goes, just seeing your spouse's reaction when they find out what you've done, he goes, should cause a normal person to feel sorrow. And he goes, and I live with that for a second or two, and I think about it. How would my wife react? What would I do when my child looked me in the eye and said, Daddy, are you leaving? And he goes, when I think about it, he goes, it brings a tear to my eye. And he goes, that is the foundation that stops me from ever doing it, because I've lived it, not in the real world, but he goes, I've lived it in my mind so clearly that it literally caused me to cry. It hurt so bad that what I had done that I will never do it. And it was interesting, because we've all had those thoughts from time to time when we think about something happening. Whether it's just one of those fleeting thoughts in your mind, or even like a dream, to where when you wake up, you're like, whoa, I had won the lottery. That was so great. I was really enjoying my house, my new mansion. And it was so real at that moment that we're really sorry we woke up. You have to create that in your mind, whether it's good or bad, and think it through. So I call that pre-learning or pre-deciding on many aspects of my life. And we've all done it to one extent or another, to where it causes us to maybe take action. If you have a puppy dog that you just love and you think, oh, wow, what would I do if that cute-ass little puppy that counts on me for everything got ran over when I pulled into work and I felt its body crush under my tire because I didn't fix the fence? And if you have a heart, you'd sit there and go, oh, that'd be gross. We've all run over a frog or something in the road that's just disgusting. And it drives us to get out the light if it's nighttime and fix that fence, put up that gate, do what it takes so that horrible thing does not happen to you because you lived it, even though it was only in a made-up construct in your mind. You hated the way it made you feel. That's what we do when we try to pre-learn or daydream or think about things. It's not a new concept in philosophy or psychology. I mean, people have asked shrinks for years. I'll be sitting there talking to my really good friend, and in my mind, I'll think of just slugging him in the face. And we're like, what the hell's wrong with me, doctor? And I had a psychologist tell me the reason we do that is because the brain wants us to realize how much we care about that person by showing us a negative. And I thought, that's really sick and twisted, but it happens. And it's not like I create this little scenario in my head. It just happened. I'm sitting there talking, and it's like, what if I hit that guy? And all of a sudden, you're like, what the hell would I do that for? It's kind of people that have Tourette's. Because Tourette's isn't always just about cussing. There's a very famous writer that has a form of Tourette's to where when he's interviewing people, he can barely control his desire to spit on that person. Now, he doesn't do it, but it's real. And he's figured it out that if he did, it probably ruined his career. But he can monitor that and make sure it doesn't happen. Now, that's Tourette's. That's something totally biochemically different in humans. It's the way that person is wired. So how do we rewire ourselves? How do we reprogram ourselves to where a skill that maybe we were born with, to think outside the box and to create scenarios that we can analyze? How do we do that? So I look at it pretty simply, and that's why I said in the beginning, think of the worst case scenario. That way, as long as I'm not being eaten by wolves, I'm doing okay. So it's an optimistic trigger, basically. So we need to cultivate that. So what are some of the things that would happen to us while we're out and about trying to stay alive after an EMP? Well, what if we did get up in the morning and somebody had stumbled close enough to our camp that when we got up in that sleeping state, we wandered over to go talk to a tree, and there's another group of people, small, large. How are you going to handle that? And that's when we get into the meat of it. So you can start running down these scenarios. It's like, well, I'm a good person. I know this guy. He was my high school teacher. Seemed to be really nice always. So I'm going to say, hey, come on over to our camp. We were just getting ready to feed breakfast to everybody. And that person might go, no, we're good. We got food. You're off the hook. But what if they go, oh, great, we haven't eaten for days since that thing happened. So you go back, you rummage up enough food to feed them. Okay, crisis averted. Maybe. So what if that person says, hey, we're just as lost as you are. Why don't we travel together? Okay, now you have an option. What's your answer? Yes or no? If you tell them yes, now you're part of a group, a ragtag, ad hoc type of group. They have no food because they haven't eaten for 3 or 4 days, and yours is going away at a high rate because there's more of them than you, or there's the same amount, so your food is dwindling twice as fast. Also, what is your plan? Do you want other people? Was your plan to go up to a cave that you happened to find at one time that had water in it and just hide under a rock until this whole thing goes away? Because you know there's food there, not a lot, but there's some squirrels, there's rabbit, there's game. Very few people go there. Do you want to take another person that is noisy clumsy. His kids scream and yell, whine a lot. Not bad things. I mean, most families are that way. Do you want them with you? So now you make a decision. No, we're heading this way. Well, he's probably going to sit there and go, well, what about us? We're lost. We don't have any food. You got food. That he's just thrown down the gauntlet. You have food. I don't. What about us? So now you're in a situation that you've allowed to happen by not paying attention that has forced you to do or be something that you're not. So have you created a set of rules you will go by? I mean, lying is not off the table. You could sit there and go, we're just going up here, going to meet up with a group of people. They don't want strangers. Trust me, if you're with me, they will shoot you. He don't know that. It diverts that one problem, what about me? Because you just answered it. It's like, hey, what about you? If you come with me, you're going to end up dead. He doesn't know your team. So he might think, well, let me talk to him. So then now you've gotten yourself into a little bit of a corner. But you could say, no, I'm not the owner of that team. I'm not the leader of that team. They will throw you and me both out or kill us both. So you can go down that road. You've now just lied. Are you a liar? Well, I would hope not. But you've allowed yourself to get into a position to where now you have to be something you're not. Are you a liar? Are you a good liar? Do you have a poker face for it? What if you tell them, no, I don't want you with me. Screw you guys. You're stupid. And I told you for months that you should be preparing for this. Well, now he's on the defensive. He's going to go, screw you. What makes you so damn smart? What if I just take your shit? What if he actually has a gun and you don't? Or yours is laying over there by the camp and he's got his with him. What are you going to do? So if you think about it, you don't have to come up with an answer for everything. But just think about, what would I do? Who am I? What kind of person am I when that happens? Because trust me, a lot of those that things will happen. You'll stumble into people. They will stumble into your camp. You might be camping over a ledge and they fall off the ledge and break their leg and land on your campfire. What are you going to do about it? These things all happen. Now, I'm of the mindset that I want to stay as far away from people during a collapse as humanly possible. In fact, if I could move to the moon, I would. Not because I don't like people, but because I don't like being put in a position to where I have to be that guy. I don't want to have to lie to someone I stumble across. I don't want to have to be their shrink or their cook or their trainer on how to use a damn gun. I don't have time for that. I've spent my time figuring shit out. Why didn't they? So that's one aspect of why I want to stay away from people, because it's going to force me to make a snap judgment, just like if I was flirted with when I was younger and made a decision based on nothing other than lust, because I didn't think about it. What's another factor that might make you make a wrong decision? Fear, uncertainty, panic, hunger. So if you can avoid those things, does not mean that the people you come across have violence. You might just come across somebody that you have no idea who they are, but they are just a violent person. Maybe they just walked out of prison because the power went out. You don't know them. And if you're reading their body language and you're seeing that they're up to no good, and they're snickering when you talk to them, then there is no respect for where you are or what you're doing. Now what are you going to do? I mean, I know what I would do, but what are you going to do? How would you react to that? Are you the type of person that at a drop of a hat, if you see it going sideways, you just shoot? It's not a bad thing. The psychology of violence will teach us that the first person that opens their mouth to talk in a basically a standoff situation means that's the first person that started to think, and therefore they have a plan and you're not part of it. So anyone that has studied in depth this kind of subject of violence, knows that your first reaction should be to shoot them dead. Can you do that? We all say we could do it. And if the situation was right, we probably all could do it. If somebody broke a window and you had time to think and you go, who the hell is that? Why are they breaking my window? Is that someone I know that's running from somebody? If we're given the time to really analyze everything that is happening, we might react properly. But in a situation like an EMP or a collapse where people are not firing on all cylinders, if you haven't thought about your reactions in certain situations, then you're going to hesitate. And he who hesitates usually dies. It goes back to the old expression, the most committed wins. If they're committed to their agenda more than you are committed to protecting your family, they will win, you will die. So there's a good argument to be made for thinking not only outside the box, but under the table and out in the backyard on this subject. Create scenarios that you might think will happen. That's why that card game is so great, because it throws a lot at you. I don't play the game as far as the game goes. I just read the cards and go, what would I do? And then I try to live it. I try to create a little movie in my head and live it for just a minute or two until I get that visceral reaction that tells me this is not going well. I would do this. And then I can put the card away and move on to the next one. Because I've thought about it. You have to think about defense of your family, yourself, self-defense, charity, compassion. All of those become what-if scenarios. Your friend you stumbled upon is hungry. It can change in a heartbeat if you give the wrong answer, say the wrong thing. And plus, you don't know this person, really, do you? How many times have we seen on the news, he seemed like a great guy. Everyone liked him. Yeah, right up until they found 15 bodies buried in his yard. You don't know people. You barely know your family half the time. How many times have people said, boy, I never figured Uncle Bob would do that. Gosh, showed up at the party drunk and naked. It's like, well, yeah, everyone knows Bob's a drunk. Yeah, but I didn't know he was a nudist drunk. So we don't know people. So compassion has to take a back seat. Charity has to take a back seat until you have all your ducks in a row to where you know your reaction to every situation. And that's going to be your lifeline and your silver bullet to this situation. Because we're going to talk a little bit about gangs and other things here in a minute. But all of it, everything regarding surviving an EMP and this book is about the psychology, the human side, the side that you will live when that happens. We know we'll survive the EMP itself, but why will 90% of Americans die in the first year after an EMP? If you're curious about that, you might want to read a really good book called One Second After by William Forston. It's all about an EMP. They all survived the actual EMP, but what did that community have to do during the first year? The second book was okay. The third one was better. But really, the book that was the one that stood out the most was the actual first book and the first year and all of the challenges this community had to face in the first year after an EMP. So it's a good book for reference. It talks a little bit more about group dynamic in a community and surviving after the first year. It's not about the actual EMP, because who the hell cares once it's happened? This book, Will You Survive an EMP, is very solitarily written. It's about you, maybe your family, if you have one, a few of your friends. But trust me, I would not recommend having a bug-out plan that involved anyone other than someone I was related to and knew them inside and out and could trust them with my back, maybe a military brother-in-arm, but anyone else, it's not that strong. We see it all the time. Bank robbers who known each other their whole life, one of them will roll over on the other one to keep his ass out of prison. Do you know that person? This book is about you. The only person you can control at the end of the day after an EMP is going to be you and your mindset and your ability to protect those that are with you at that time. And I would highly recommend it is only your family, your immediate family, your spouse, and your children. If you happen to live close enough to a sibling that you're on the same page about this, then them too. But a sheepdog cannot protect every herd in the field, only those that it's been raised to protect. So we will get more into the psychology of violence, dealing with groups and other things, and then we will wrap this up. So how does the psychology of violence affect our humanity? Man's main task in life is to give birth to himself, to become what he potentially is. Erich Fromm. The human animal tries to survive in some kind of social construct created years ago. We try to be civilized, but in bad situations, that doesn't always work out. Human beings have been stabbing fellow humans in the back for centuries. The only difference between us and the animal kingdom is that we have the ability to reason and to think. We may not know why Cain killed Abel, but we know that Cain killed Abel, his own brother. In a new world that we would live in after an EMP, there will be many agendas. People will be driven mostly by hunger, starvation, and thirst, leading to sickness and disease. Most people will be tried and weary. Their children will be crying and even dying. Though you may want to help in some small way, they might not be rational. That you only have a certain amount of food to give them won't matter to them in their state of mind. They would rather you starve to death than listen to your reasons why you need to help and keep some of that food to yourself. You are not their priority. They would rather take your stuff than hear their children cry. So this touches on our humanity. Most parents will skip meals to feed our children. Going without food for long periods of time causes hallucination, deliriousness, and therefore they no longer are rational. So how do we keep our humanity? How do we still be that person that is good, caring, not a backstabbing jackass? How do we do that? Well, we've talked about pre-learning and trying to figure things out that could happen. Those will all be based on your humanity. If you're one of them people that cannot turn away a hungry family, no matter what, then the lesson you learn while you pre-learn and run through this scenario in your head will obviously be to help those people. That's who you are. That is your humanity. If you're a single person or you don't have a family with you, that might be fine. You can be the sheepdog and help them. You can teach them to hunt. You can do all these things. But remember that every person you try to help is more footprints going down that road that people can follow and track. The more of you there are, the harder it is to hide, especially in plain sight. So your humanity will be what determines all of your decisions. And we need to keep that in mind. Who am I? What makes me tick? Could I do that? Could I let this happen? We won't be given the choice of stopping and turning back the clock on an EMP. And it will suck and tear us all apart that there will be so many people, 90% of people on planet Earth, if this was a worldwide EMP like a solar flare, will die in 1 year. That means for every month, this is rough math, one of those 10 people you knew will die. Next month, another one will die. And on and on and on until 90% of the Earth's population will be dead within the first year. The goal should be for you not to be one of those 90%. But we have that humanity thing that hangs around us and keeps us trying to be nice, civilized, to fit in that social norm or that construct that we've created for ourselves, to not be a dick. Only you can draw that line. Only you can say, I will go this far, but no further. I will stop right there. If you have children and a spouse, your line might be way different than one person trying to make it from point A to point B after an EMP. The problem is drawing that line, because we are nice people. I believe most people alive are good people, but that still leaves 10, 15% of people out there that are not good people, and that's a big number. So how do you deal with people? How do you keep your humanity? That's why I spend so much time trying to pre-learn things, because as I'm going down that road that I've created in my mind, while I'm thinking about an event or a situation that may or may not ever happen, the decisions will be made based on that visceral reaction I had. If it's talking to myself about cheating on my wife, and that visceral reaction is sad or anger or hurt, sure, there's the other visceral reaction of the pleasure for 20, 30 minutes to be with another person. But my humanity is what draws the line and says, that hurt, you don't like it. That is not who you are. A lot of people can steal, can go rob a neighbor. I've been robbed. It sucked. The tools that I worked for years to have, the best quality tools that I needed for my profession, gone. I don't need to be religious to realize that if being robbed sucks so bad, then being a robber also sucks, because I'm bringing that pain, that hurt, that emotion to them, and they're strangers. That is my humanity. That is what says, I won't do that to that person because I don't want it done to me. And when we learn how it works inside of our head, then we can think clearer, faster, on our feet. So when you think about violence and you stumble into a group, or they come to you because you weren't paying attention, or you walk up over a hill and bam, there they are. Let's say you get the upper hand and you shoot them, protecting your family, and everyone's fine. They're dead and you're fine. How is that going to set with your humanity a week later, a month later? Let's say everything ends and the power comes back on and somebody lived to complain. You might have to go to court and live with that decision, not only just mentally, but in the court system. So your set of rules must be based on your humanity and your moral fiber. If I knew for a fact that they were going to hurt me, because immediately coming over that hill when they surrounded me and started trying to disarm me and looking at my wife or making rude comments, that was all it took to eliminate them from the equation. Was it right? I really don't have time to think about it at that very split second. They were up to no good, because the minute they saw me, they didn't sit there and go, hey, welcome. God, nice to see that somebody else is still alive. They made a decision to be aggressive, to be hurtful, to say mean things, and to start trying to force some form of uneasiness or control over my thoughts and my actions by intimidating me. I have no patience for that. So therefore, they already played their first couple cards, and in that nanosecond, whether I shoot them or bake them a cake is determined by not only my humanity, but what I see and perceive at that moment. If they're all dead and I have to go through their stuff to find more ammo and more food, so be it. And if they have coffee on the fire, I'm going to drink their last cup of coffee and not feel bad, because they made that decision to be something, maybe something they weren't, but at that moment, rather than to be open and to be human and to have their humanity show through and say, wow, you scared the shit out of us, but glad you're here. We could use some more help. We're trying to do this or that. And yeah, it's a snap judgment. But you know what? Sometimes in life, you don't have the luck, the time, the convenience to take and analyze everything like in a court of law and go, oh, yeah, I guess he's just... You know, he talks that way. Oh, so he's a controlling dick. No, he chose to make the first move. That group chose to show some form of disrespect and violence toward me. And that's all it takes to say, I'm okay with that. I had to do this because my instinct at that moment override any underlying humanity based on the knowledge I have of people and the history of violence and the philosophy of violence and the way people are when there is no rule of law. So they brought that on themselves. And I say this also because sometimes you will bring something upon yourself that you might not like. So we have to maintain who we are. If you do stumble across somebody and you come across as arrogant, self-righteous, or threatening, and that person is just the scout for the rest of the group, that the minute you draw your weapon, they kill you and your entire family because of your actions. So this is why we need humanity and we need education and we need to learn people skills, body language, reading a situation, reading an environment, like watching the clouds and going, those are rain clouds, those are not rain clouds. It may seem unfair that you have to learn all of this shit, but that's the way it is. That is why we become preppers. Not because we want to have a year's supply of food and a lot of cool gear. Yes. Do a lot of people become preppers just for that reason? Sure. I like saying I'm a prepper because every time I buy camp gear, I can call it prepping gear. But I don't go out and go into debt and become some macho, bravado-speaking prepper. I prep to stay alive. And part of my preps is learning mindset. Part of my preps is reading psychology and human nature, body language, reading people when I'm sitting at a restaurant, understanding what those people are talking about, even though I can't hear them based on body language. That is a prep also. So if we prep well and we study hard, staying alive during an EMP will not be that difficult. In the 1700s and 1800s, people still had homes. They still raised family. They still had a roof over their head and a hot meal in their stomach. The ones that were assholes are the ones that ended up dead, just like today. So hopefully this will help you understand that, yes, you will survive an EMP. Will you survive life after an EMP? That's the key question this book addresses. How do you keep alive? How do you not lose your humanity? How do you not become that person that if you woke up the next day and the lights came on and the police showed up and you had to go answer for your actions, would you be found guilty or not guilty? Would your humanity be intact, or will you have let the EMP destroy that as well?
Well, I want to thank you for tuning in and listening to this show. I hope I brought something to the table for you all. As always, go to prepperguy.com, read the show notes, and run over to YouTube. Check out my channel every once in a while. I'll have a video out there, and sometimes I do the whole episode as a video. Other than that, I hope you have a great week, and we will talk to you later. As always, enjoy the apocalypse.